Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Gone are the days of judging the virtues or deficits of a war on the back of a veteran. Even with the American public's growing frustration and impatience with the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, you can't go far on a highway without spotting one of those yellow ribbon magnets silently urging us to support our troops. And at issue one on the November 3 ballot, was proposed to give certain recent veterans bonuses of up to $1,000. We're going to talk about that. Perhaps one of our greatest lessons, most painful lessons of the Vietnam War was the mistreatment of our returning troops, the disrespect and so forth. And now on the surface, we admire and revere their sacrifices. But in reality, it's maybe a different story, at least from some perspectives. Last year, more than 400 homeless veterans roamed the streets of Ohio. And Rick Isbell, who coordinates veterans affairs for the city of Columbus, told one reporter recently that this year, more are expected to join those ranks. Rick is joining our ranks today in the studio to talk about the benefits that are out there in the Buckeye State for our returning veterans and what else they need. Rick is a veteran. He served in the Air Force for 7 years until 1993 and was part of Operation Desert Storm. Rick, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me. I'm really glad to be here.
Also joining us in the studio is Doug Lay. He is the director of the Franklin County Veterans Service Commission. Thanks, Doug, for making it.
Good morning.
We did invite a representative of the governor's cabinet-level Department of Veterans Services. It was created last year. They are all the big shots there are all at a meeting out of town and were unable to attend, but they would have if they could have. So maybe another day. Doug, your biographical information, when I was reading it, includes involvement in many veterans-related organizations, and I just want to go through this to make a point. The Department of Veterans Affairs, Integrated Healthcare Services Network, Ohio State University Dean's Committee on Veterans Healthcare, President of the Ohio Veterans Hall of Fame Foundation, Trustee of the Military and Veterans Educational Foundation, Ohio Vietnam Veterans Assistance Council, the Columbus Mayor's Veterans Advisory Committee, the Ohio Veterans Employment and Training Council, Governor's Office of Veterans Affairs Advisory Committee, American Legion, the VFW, the American Division of Veterans Associations. Holy Toledo.
And he sells popcorn at halftime.
And he's a veteran himself. That's a lot of organization out there. Those are many agencies. And yet there's this sense that there is a dearth of care for veterans in this country when we hear the stories about Walter Reed Military Hospital and those kinds of stories about people waiting long to get their benefits, to get some notice for post-traumatic stress disorder from the Vietnam War, let alone the wars we're fighting now. How do you explain that?
Well, as you said, I'm involved with a lot of agencies that deal with veterans, but they're so fragmented. You know, we have the VFW that does their thing and the VA who does their thing, the Veterans Services Commission that does their thing. So there's a lot of fragmentation out there. And as many people like to see a one-stop shopping, there isn't such a thing. You know, if you want something in particular, you almost have to go to this location. Fortunately for our agency, we're kind of a one-stop agency that we can help with veterans benefits through the Department of Veterans Affairs. Or on the other side, we can also help with short-term emergency financial assistance. So we kind of tie a lot of that together.
Tell me about the Veterans Service Commission, the Franklin County Veterans Service Commission. When was it created and what you said one-stop shopping? What is the range of services?
Well, it was really the Veterans Service Commissions in Ohio were established shortly after the Civil War. It was more or less trying to give back to those veterans who are returning to Ohio some a little assistance in trying to rejoin society. And I think part of it was the land portion where they would get some land to begin their livelihood again. And it's really accelerated since probably 1940 forward, where the Veterans Service Commission, with the implementation of the Department of Veterans Affairs, would be able to file for benefits for those military men and women who were injured or became ill while on military service. And that was our chief function was doing that. Some years later, we began because we see some disconnect between the timeliness of the VA making determination on veterans' benefits. There's families out there that how am I going to have food? You know, how am I going to pay my rent? So the Veterans Services Commissions began establishing short-term emergency financial assistance to essentially help in that gap, waiting on the Department of Veterans Affairs to make a determination. So we have an array of services and even though we're statuted by Ohio law, every Veterans Service Commission on the financial side creates their own policies and programs to administer those. So what we have in Franklin County is probably not duplicated in any other county throughout Ohio.
Author, award-winning journalist Martin Schramm, in his book Vets Under Siege, How America Deceives and Dishonors Those Who Fight Our Battles, says that maybe the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs should be rewrite its name to more clearly define its what its role should be, which is the U.S. Department of Veterans Advocacy. That if it did, maybe it wouldn't take so long to get things done if they sort of rethought what their purpose is. And I know, Rick, in your biography, you mentioned what your mission is. And tell us what that is.
Well, my mission is actually to be a conduit, to be the person that helps. When a veteran comes to my office, they're usually a person that's come to the end of their rope. They've gone to different places, had the door slammed in their face, or they didn't understand what was happening. And they say, hey, Rick, I need some help. I got your phone number for somebody else. And I'm more or less the conduit. I say, okay, here's the right place to go. Here's the right person to talk to, and here's what you need to say. And the only reason that I come and say that is that being a disabled veteran myself, I've had some of those problems. I've been on the other side of the desk, and I've had people tell me no. I've had people slam the door in my face or say it's not my job. And instead of offering, well, here's another place you can go because that's not what I do, that was the end of it. So I always want to make people aware that my door is still open no matter what. Even if you call my office out of a mistake, I get so many calls of, I need medicine. Can you help me? Well, definitely I'm not the person to be doling out medicine, but I'm going to get you to the right place. And to help with benefits and information, that's really key to part of what I do in my day-to-day job.
Doug, you're with the county. Doug Lay's with the Franklin County Office.
Veteran Services Commission.
Veteran Services Commission. See, I'm already confused. And then Rick Isbell, you're with the Columbus Mayor's Office of Veterans Affairs.
That's correct.
Okay. Is it confusing, Doug, to have organizations like Rick's out there? Or is it good?
Well, I think it's exceptionally good because what the word needs to get out. You know, well, there's probably 100,000 veterans in Franklin County. Then we look at the dependents we can also serve. You know, we see 20,000 veterans a year. So there's an untouched resource out there. So if we can get the word out through Rick's office, my office, and venues such as this, that's only going to benefit the veterans down the road.
I guess it's just another portal.
Yeah, exactly.
Some people it might occur to them to call the mayor's office, and other people it might occur to them to call you at the county level, or maybe even, you know, at the federal level or the state level.
And the biggest question you get is, what are my benefits? What do I do? They're at an end. Everybody's met some place at their life, and they don't know what's really out there for them. And I always sing the praises to Franklin County Veteran Services because there's a lot that they do that people are unaware of, and they take on more and more every year with dental and car and a whole lot of things that were not thought of 10 years ago. Like I said, as a disabled veteran, I actually had to use Franklin County Veteran Services when I was disabled, waiting for them to make a decision. So they came to my aid when I needed them the most, and so I this is my way of paying back.
Yeah, it must be a great job. Feel good to be doing it.
Yeah,
you're a trained graphic artist, right?
That is true. That is true. I used a skill and ability that I had given, and I was glad that they saw that I had that ability, and I went through school. That was part of my rehabilitation.
Let's talk about issue one and talk about what it would do. Speaking of somebody looking for some help, that was what was happening, I think, at State Treasurer's office a couple years ago when someone went to them and said, gee, isn't there a bonus we're supposed to get when we come home from war? Hmm. And that's what triggered the notion and then State Treasurer Rich Cordray's mind that, well, where is that bonus and why don't they have it? And then he went to the state legislature and started to lobby for such a thing. There was legislation introduced, I think, in both houses. And since then, he's become the state attorney general and really doesn't discuss the issue because he may have to defend the state on one level or another regarding it. But let's talk about issue one, how it evolved and what it really means. Is it just a token sort of thing or does it have real meaning? Rick, Doug, whoever.
Well, I wouldn't say it's a token thing. It shows that the civilian population and everybody has a feeling for the veteran of the wars. We've done it in the past wars.
Well, what it would do is it would authorize the state to sell bonds to raise about $200 million, I think, to dole out bonuses for returning veterans from the wars of the Desert Storm, Iraq, and Afghanistan, right?
Correct.
Okay. And then they come back. What are the different levels of bonus that people get, Doug?
Really depends on where they served in the time period.
Okay.
You know, like the Vietnam Generation bonus, if you served in Vietnam, you had a monetary amount, and if you served elsewhere, you had a little bit lesser. And that's the same concept that this legislation imposes.
Okay. So if you're in active duty but you're pushing papers in Washington versus actually at the front in Iraq, that's a different level.
Correct.
Okay.
Sure.
And then also there is a survivor's benefit that would be provided by this, $5,000 for a family.
Yes, right.
So voters are going to have to vote on this for the first time and put it in the Constitution, which would make it permanent, right?
Right. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. What are you hearing back from people about this, from the people you serve? Anything? Do they even know it's out there?
We're starting to get some calls and, you know, asking, when can I get my bonus? And we have to say, well, you know, we have to wait for the voters and we have to wait for the money and so forth. It's going to probably, if it is passed, I suspect the process will probably begin sometime in June of next year to make the application. But I really haven't heard a whole lot about, you know, in favor or opposition.
Right.
So it's one of those constitutional amendments that's on the ballot because I think people are focused on other constitutional changes now.
Just a few.
Yeah.
And I'd have to say the same. Most people are confused from when it first came out
when the issue first arose.
When it first arose, and they were thinking, well, isn't this already in play? Aren't we already supposed to get this? And I said, no, you have to wait till after the vote on November 3rd.
Okay, let's take a quick break. You are listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I am speaking with Rick Isbell. He is with the Columbus Mayor's Office of Veterans Affairs, and also Doug, why did I just forget your name? Why am I doing this today?
Lay,
I know. Okay.
I know it every day.
He is with the Franklin County Veterans Service Commission, and I will not forget his name. Doug Lay. All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News. We'll be right back.
You are listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News. 57 degrees in downtown Columbus at 11:19. At noon, fresh air will be here. The Big Burn. Author Tim Egan takes us back to 1910 to the scene of the largest forest fire in American history. 3 million acres, an area the size of Connecticut, burned in the space of one weekend. The fire was what Egan calls a monster that takes on a life of its own. That discussion on fresh air at noon, right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. Looking at the weather forecast, sunshine today and a high of 65. Clouds move in tonight, but the rain will hold off for Beggar's Night tonight, and then a chance of showers after midnight, a low of 53. Cloudy skies and a good chance of rain for Friday, a high of 68 degrees for Friday. Currently 56 degrees, you're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm speaking today with Doug Lay. He's the director of the Franklin County Veterans Service Commission and also Rick Isbell. He coordinates the Veterans Affairs for the City of Columbus. If you would like to join the conversation, we're talking about Issue 1, which would provide bonuses for returning veterans from the wars in, from here on out, if it's a constitutional amendment, but for now, from the wars in Desert Storm, Afghanistan, and Iraq. If you would like to join the conversation, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. So you're saying that if somebody comes back from the war and gets a $1,000 bonus, that can make a big difference?
For some, yes. That's an initial rental deposit, finding a place to live, transportation from the military to civilian life. Does your food follow you? Do your clothes follow you and stuff like that? So that can be a short-term stopgap for some of those living necessities.
Yeah, and there are times when people are so used to being with Uncle Sam, you know, their roof was given to them, their clothes were given to them, so coming to civilian life, it's a big change.
Yeah, suddenly rent deposit. You're right, food, clothes, that sort of thing. It is different. Do other states provide these kind of bonuses?
Some.
Okay,
some,
not yeah. Universal though.
No, it's up to each state.
And what does the federal government do for veterans who return from war? Does it besides all of its benefits, does it do any kind of bonus program like this?
I'm not aware of any. You know, you get your last paycheck. And you get to go home.
We've got a lot of calls. What are other financial benefits are available, cash sort of financial benefits are available for returning veterans?
Well, there's so many different levels of of returning veterans. You have disabled veterans. You have veterans who are National Guard, reserves. So we're looking at different levels. So you actually have to get down to the brass tacks with the person and hear all sides of what's going on.
Is that the case, Doug?
Yeah, it is. You know, there's just an array of services. We have burial benefits. You have education benefits. You have loans, you know, VA loans for homes. And then you look at the compensation and pension side where they get monetary monthly income for those injuries sustained in military. So once again, it's good to have agencies like ours that somebody can come in and sit down and say, what am I entitled to? What are my benefits? And then look at the era. Where did you serve? What type of discharge do you have? And let's begin from there.
Right. And we can ask certain questions that will bring out the answers that you're looking for, because you may not know that you're entitled to these things. And without these questions, you know, then we can say, okay, you need to go see this person.
Why doesn't the military prepare people before they leave, before they're discharged, with these kinds of issues? In other words, it's kind of the same argument that people wonder, why don't we teach kids how to use a checkbook before they graduate from high school and go on and supposedly become adults? Why aren't they prepared in advance?
Well, Anne, do you remember being a teenager and your parents telling you, oh, this is what you should do when you leave the house and, you know, change your oil and do all these other things? And you're like, yeah, I'm just ready to go.
No, I was perfect, but go on. I know that kind of person, but yeah.
Right. Well, when you're leaving the military, they have a TAP program, a transition assistance program. Each and every one of them has something. But when you're coming back from war and you want to get home to your family, you want to get home to your folks or to your life, in one ear and out the other.
Right.
You know, and if they hear PTSD one more time, they're going to scream. So what they're doing is they may be there, but they may not listen to all of it.
Right.
And it takes people like Doug and myself, when they get home and they realize, hey, what did he say about my eyes and my dental, or what am I supposed to do now?
Right.
I didn't pay any attention. That's when they turn to us. And hopefully we'll be there to give them the right answer, and they'll listen this time and move on. I'm not saying everybody's like that.
Mm-hmm.
But 9 times out of 10, I know myself as a disabled person. I was sick. I just wanted to get out of that meeting and get on with my life.
Doug. Well, and also they tend to be very young.
Well, young. And the other thing is if you're sitting in an auditorium with 300 men and women, not all are coming back to Ohio. So you can't say, go to Ohio and get this. Go to Michigan and get this. Go to Texas and get this. You know, because every state is unique. And as I said, we're probably the best veteran support network in the United States with all the array of services we can do at the state and county level that, you know, for those people going back to Texas or California or New Mexico, they may not have that.
It's kind of sad to think that they're all fighting in the same war, but then when they return home, they may be returning home to vastly different sorts of resources and levels of help.
Well, that isn't necessarily true, because you have the VA side. You have the health care and you have the benefits. But as states like Ohio and Michigan, to some extent, Indiana and Illinois, have some financial aspect to it. But each state does have a service office that can help them file for those benefits on health care and their benefits for compensation.
Okay. If you have questions, comments, call 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. That's 614-292-8513. And Edward, you are on the air. Thanks for your call.
Good morning, Ann.
Good morning.
I'm calling to express my support for this amendment, because I am a Vietnam War vet, and I received the maximum bonus that was available in Ohio I think it was 1973 or 4. It was $500. I was a young man just getting started with the family and small children, and it made a tremendous amount of difference to me. And so I would encourage anything that we could do to honor our servicemen and women. To financial stipend is just really the beginning of what we owe to these people.
When did you serve, Edward?
I served from 1959 to 1969. And I had back in the Vietnam era, they had the state of Ohio gave their bonus based upon how many periods of eligibility you served, where you were eligible for the star on your Vietnam service ribbon. You got a certain, I don't know, a year and a half or whatever it was. You got another star for each period. So I had the maximum eligibility, so I was given the $500. Made a tremendous difference to a young man just getting started in life.
Okay. Thanks for your call.
Welcome back, Edward. Thank you.
Yes. Thanks for your service.
Thanks.
Okay. And Karen, you're on the air. What do you know? Karen?
Oh, hello.
Hello, Karen. You're on the air. That's okay.
I was wondering, the legislators have, I think, passed funds for the military service, and I think the Department of Taxation has helped out veterans through the income tax filings, et cetera. And I was wondering why this is being done through a change to the Constitution, and particularly why particular veterans are being selected in this amendment. I wasn't quite sure why it was being done this way.
Well, I know that they did ask the legislature to do it legislatively, and it passed the Senate back a couple years ago or maybe last year, but they couldn't get it through the Ohio House of Representatives. They didn't have enough votes. So but they did legislatively put it on the ballot, which is the same thing they're doing with the casino issue. Let's see. A lot of things these days, Karen. They don't legislate them. They just whip them on the ballot for us to vote on.
Well, the first time they put it out there, they didn't want to do it through
general revenue funds.
They wanted general revenue funds, which really wasn't the way that the governor wanted to go through. We wanted to do it responsibly so we can pay it back over time, especially when you're hurting for a budget. In the past, all the other ones were passed through a vote for the other wars.
On the ballot.
On the ballot.
But not constitutional amendments.
I don't know the answer.
Well, the gentleman who received his money as a Vietnam veteran, that obviously wasn't through a constitutional amendment because we don't have it on there yet.
It's not still coming.
Well, that had an end date.
That's right. You know, Doug Lay, explain the end date issue. And Karen, thanks for your call. We were talking about it earlier and off the air, and maybe it's a good time to talk about that on the air now. Thanks, Karen. Yeah, talk about the end date issue.
Looking at the legislation, as I looked at it the other day, it said for the Persian Gulf, for the beginning of the engagement, I can't remember the exact date, sometime in 1990, but it ended in March of 1991. So this legislation only, as I understand it and interpret it, only affects those men and women who served during that period of time. So consequently, if somebody that served April 2nd of whatever the deadline was, they wouldn't be eligible even though they may have been still engaged in some cases in armed conflict in
someplace else.
Someplace else.
It wouldn't matter. And this proposed constitutional amendment, it would authorize the state to issue up to $200 million of bonds to provide compensation to veterans of the Persian Gulf, Afghanistan, and Iraq conflicts, and to pay for the administration of the Persian Gulf, Afghanistan, and Iraq conflicts compensation bond retirement fund and the Persian Gulf, Afghanistan, and Iraq conflicts compensation fund. So once again, I mean, these are ongoing conflicts. If it passes, they'll keep paying out until it ends. But ultimately, if there ever is an end date, it will end.
Exactly.
I imagine.
Right. And there is a monetary end date on that, too. So it's not like.
Right.
Up to a certain amount of money.
Okay. And it says the state would provide stipends of $100 a month up to a total of $1,000 for Ohio veterans who served in those conflicts. Furthermore, the state would provide stipends of $50 a month up to a total of $500 for Ohio veterans who served elsewhere during the conflicts. Okay, there's that gradation there. In addition, the family members of qualified deceased Ohio veterans could apply for a $5,000 death benefit. So, Karen, I hope that answers some of your questions. Let's see. Bill, you have a comment to make about issue one. You're on the air.
This is Bill.
Hi, Bill.
Call my name. I didn't hear
it. I did, and I said you have a comment to make about issue one, right?
Yes, I do. Thank you very much. Whatever the benefits or disadvantages or appropriateness of the state paying for a federal responsibility, notwithstanding, because I really can't buy that the state has a responsibility to do what the federal government has done so badly. Look at the way the Veterans Administration and Walter Reed and everything has been handled so poorly. Spend more money on Blackwater. Why do we have to keep patching things onto the Ohio Constitution? It seems so inappropriate to do it that way. It wasn't done that way before. They didn't get the votes when they went for it another way. And to keep pushing for the state to do something that's inappropriate for the state of Ohio and slap it into the Constitution just seems so inappropriate.
Okay. Bill, thanks for your call. There's the question. The issue is, why couldn't they do it legislatively instead of changing the Constitution? Of course, both of you aren't responsible for that. But sometimes things can't get through the legislature like they can through on a ballot issue. An example of that is issue two, which would be the agricultural farm animals ballot issue that you'll be voting on November 3rd as well. They couldn't agree on legislation that our elected lawmakers could not agree on legislation that would pass. They were lobbied heavily and quickly to put this issue on the ballot. There's no question. There's no disagreement about that. It was voted on near unanimously because people could say, well, I didn't vote for it. It doesn't mean I support it. I just support the voters' rights to vote on it on a ballot issue. So it's a way to avoid a lot of political conflict. And it's also a way to expedite something and get it before the voters and get it dealt with faster than it might during the legislature, which I think has passed about 10 bills so far this year. Okay.
I think like you just said, the point is that we're asking the voters to make this decision instead of someone else making the decision for you. So who's really losing here? You know, voters, you can go out and say exactly what you feel and how you feel by going out on November 3rd and making your vote.
So if you oppose it, you vote no. And if you support it, you vote yes. And it is a direct form of democracy. No question about that.
Exactly.
Ivra, you are on the air. You have a question.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I do support issue one. I am a Vietnam vet, and I did retire from the Ohio Air National Guard. So, I'm all for anything that helps veterans because I'm looking at now on the other end, whereas I got trying to advocate for every time I can for veterans that I come in contact with from time to time. And right now I have a guy who said he went down to the Veterans Services Commission and they told him they would help him. You know, he's in the homeless shelter, trying to get out of the shelter. He said he could get 1 month's rent, the first month's last rent, and some food vouchers, but he's struggling because he needs a job. He needs he don't want to go and take the rent and not just be able to stay for a couple of months and then be back out on in the shelter again. So he needs job training, and it just seems like there's nothing available to get these guys. In that, I believe, 15 years ago, he had some kind of little problem with legal problem. And I guess apparently that's also coming back to haunt him.
Okay, that's a good question. That's an interesting question.
Yeah, I can see that, legal problems, we see those every day.
How do those affect things?
It does. I mean, even so, to the extent now, we're even seeing employers looking at credit checks. You know, if you have a bad credit history, you may be a suspect in employment down the road. So not only do they look at past offenses, criminal or otherwise, they're also looking at credit checks. But yeah, there is a disconnect, and in today's economy, it's very, very difficult for people to find jobs. Our agency does help with rent, deposits, foods, and things like that. But we also we are not designed as a long-term agency. Depending on the circumstances, we refer the individuals to the job leaders at 1111 East Broad Street for assistance. They have veterans employment representatives there to help veteran-specific cases like that. So, we can do all those things. And that's what we encourage veterans to come down and see, is because they shouldn't look at this as this is just a one-time thing. We don't have any limits, monetary or length of time that veterans can apply. Okay. But the same token, if we need to file benefit, let's go that route. And we know how long the VA may take to make a decision on that. But we can help support them at that time. But we can also work with them to apply for eligible other benefits through either the VA or through other social service agencies.
Let me be real clear about this. If somebody has a legal offense – or I mean a criminal offense in their past since returning – is that an automatic disqualifier or not? Or do you take it on a case-by-case basis?
For us,
lots of benefits. Okay.
Yeah, not for us.
For anything related to the military benefit matrix?
Well, for us, to be eligible for financial assistance, you have to be a resident of the county for at least 90 days and have at least a general under honorable conditions discharge.
Okay.
So those are the two caveats that we look at when people come into our office.
Okay. And Rick, do you know of any kind of disqualifying factor like that?
The only disqualifying factor I can think of is if you have a felony and you're trying to apply for a federal job.
Okay.
That would bar you from doing
automatically.
Yes, automatically.
Okay. All right. Let's see. Nikki, you're on the air. You're asking about why don't vets go through a reentry program. And I did ask about that earlier, but maybe you have a different little flavor to your question. What's up?
Well, I may have missed that. I'm a social worker, so I see a lot of these issues every day in terms of needing assistance. And my big focus is more about trauma and mental health. And so, the vets will go to boot camp to learn all the skills for the military, but there's not a process that they go through before they reenter in society to evaluate them for trauma, to link them to resources, and to help them out. And I don't really understand why that's not going on, to make sure everybody's being assessed and getting their needs met.
Okay, thanks for your call. We'll get to that after our short break. You are listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU.org. Call 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@WOSU.org. That is not what I meant to say. It is you are listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
On the next Fresh Air, Timothy Egan takes us back to 1910 and the largest forest fire in American history.
This fire was 3 million acres, an area the size of Connecticut, burning in a weekend. The thing goes from treetop to treetop and sucks all the oxygen out of every cave. It's sort of a monster that takes on a life of its own.
Timothy Egan, author of The Big Burn, on the next Fresh Air.
Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes. It starts at noon right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. Good morning. I'm Amy Jurevich. Cloudy skies right now and 57 degrees in downtown Columbus at 1140. Get the latest information from WOSU the way you want it, daily, biweekly, or monthly. Go to WOSU.org/email to sign up for one of our WOSU e-newsletters. And you can take the NPR News Quiz on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, Saturday mornings at 11, now on WOSU 89.7 FM, NPR News and Classical Music. Taking a look at the weather forecast for today, we are being told some sunshine will peek through those clouds at some point this afternoon, and the high should be 65 degrees. A few clouds move in tonight, and looks like the rain will hold off for Beggar's Night, a low of 53. There is a slight chance of rain after midnight. And then on Friday, cloudy skies with a chance of rain showers on Friday and a high of 68 degrees. And now back to All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We are talking about Issue 1, the proposed constitutional amendment that would provide a bonus for returning veterans from the wars in the Gulf War. Thank you.
Through Iraq and Afghanistan.
Right, Iraq and Afghanistan. And that was Rick Isbell. He is with the City of Columbus's Department of Veterans Affairs, and also with us, Doug Lay. He is with the director of the Franklin County Veterans Service Commission. And Nikki, you were asking about. Sorry, I have to take a break right then. But you were asking about why aren't they better prepared to make their way before they leave the service, right?
That's correct. That they would come back and someone would take the time to evaluate how they're doing and hook them up with services or apply for benefits as needed.
Okay. All right. There isn't that kind of follow-through, is it? Once they're discharged, they're sort of on their own?
Well, pretty much after discharge, but it all depends on which level. And I want to sing the praises to our National Guard here locally in Ohio, which is possibly the best program you're ever going to find that actually thinks about the soldier. And what they are guaranteed to do is you're going to sit down with someone 30, 60, 90 days after you return back. And each time you're going to be evaluated and talk with a supervisor or a manager or somebody. And, you know, my question was, well, what if the person's supposed to get out as soon as they get back? And they said, they don't. We'll extend them. That way they're being able to be evaluated. And they also have family readiness centers all over the state.
And what do they do there?
Well, with the family readiness centers, they actually outreach to the family and where you live. There's six different centers stationed throughout the state.
And that's while they're actually overseas. They help take care of the families and keep
right.
the families together.
Or upon your return.
Okay.
Yeah. So say you may be here in Whitehall drilling, but your family's up in Toledo. They have a center up in Toledo or near Toledo that will outreach to you, and you can call in the 800 number and say, hey, we're having some problems, and they will hook you up with a business or an organization that is looking to outreach to you.
What's the 800 number?
I don't have it with me.
And we'll get it posted on the
I feel really bad about that.
It's okay. We'll post it to the website at wosu.org/allsides later today. Let's see. Let's take a few more calls. Lori, you're on the air. Hello, Lori.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
My comment was...
Hey, Lori, before you talk, could you pull your mouth just a little bit away from the speaker part of the phone? Okay, thanks.
My comment was that this seems to be a program that may have been set up in the days of, like, compulsory service. But anymore, people who are in the military, I mean, it's a very professional, it's volunteer, you enlist, you're recruited, you're told about the benefits and things that you have, you may have had a big signing bonus. It just seems to me that maybe this, with all the other availabilities of counseling in terms of the state and federal, this seems maybe no longer necessary.
Okay. Thanks, Lori. Mm-hmm. Okay, so the point made that it was compulsory before in those other wars. Now it's a volunteer army. They know what they're getting into. Why do they need all this help when they get out?
Well, because in my perspective is that, you know, let's look at the men or women who were forced in the military years ago or the ones now. They have the same issues that in any generation because – if you're subject to combat, you know, there's certain things there. In many cases, that's why the VA was established, would take care of those particular individuals who have, you know, war-related injuries and illnesses and such, whereas the general public has some traumatization. But the medical side really hasn't dealt to the extent that the VA and the medical side has for those veterans who were engaged in combat.
Okay, and Bruno, you're on the air. You want to know about who actually gets the money if it's passed, right?
Yeah, I was just wondering, for service people that were in the service, say, during the Gulf War, but were like in administrative positions that never left the states, that were here during the conflict in the Gulf War and never saw conflict, would they also receive these benefits?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, the way that's the legislation is written now, yes, they would.
It says authorize the Ohio Department of Veterans Services to provide compensation to persons who have served in active duty, which I think includes administrative in the United States Armed Forces at any time during those wars or conflicts. Okay?
Okay.
Thanks, Bruno.
And can I bring a point across? Everybody's in support of the mission. So you may be back here at DSCC, but all that equipment and all that supply that you're sending is nourishing or taking care of our Army, Navy, Air Force, and Marines, and Coast Guard.
It's all part of the effort.
It's all part of the effort. So nobody's just sitting twiddling their thumbs or painting rocks. So people are actually doing some hard work here,
right,
as well as in the field.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks. It's probably hard to talk about this when you can't really talk about whether you're for or against it. So I know it's kind of a tough position to be in. How are jobs protected when, for instance, a reserve troop is called to action? What are the laws now that protect them when they return after their year or so, or after the extension? What kind of protections do they have?
Well, there is federal protection. And there are certain requirements made by the employer. Certain requirements must be handled by the person being deployed. And there are certain Department of Labor guidelines. And what's the other one, ERISA?
ESGR or ESGR, USERA?
USERA, that's it.
Yeah.
USERA. There are requirements that, you know, they can be placed in their position upon their return. I think they receive the same promotions as eligible, stuff like that. So there is a lot of protection there. And, of course, there's been cases where, you know, servicemen and women have been downsized, for lack of a better term, you know, when they come back because the job has been abolished. So that's an issue with the Department of Labor.
Okay. And there have been problems with that at the city level. One returning veteran lost his job and his mother has blamed his suicide on that. He lost his job with the city. I think your office, Rick, was formed not long after that.
Right. And he, actually, in all realities, he didn't lose his job. He got another job.
But the perception,
so under USERA laws, the city unknowingly did the right thing.
Okay.
And, of course, you know, If you want to talk about the ESGR, which is the group that actually is the protectorate,
which means what ESGR?
That is the
Employer Support for the Guard and Reserve.
Thank you.
Okay,
way thanks, to be on Doug that. Chip Agello is the person that you need to speak to. His phone number is 336-7444. If you feel that, you know, you really need to talk to someone about that, you didn't feel like your rights are being taken care of while you were away. He's the person to talk to. And what he does is he does an outreach also to the employers to let them know about, hey, this is what you need to do for the right things to be under USERA law and to follow the right things for National. And as you well know, the city now is a 5-star employer. We make sure that we follow it to the law and go above and beyond.
Right. Okay. That's 614-336-7444, and that's Chip Agello.
That's correct.
Okay. If you have any problems with getting your job back when you return from the Reserve National Guard, he will help you out. Let's see. Bruce, you're on the air. Got a question.
Hi, Bruce. I would like to comment regarding the earlier caller who mentioned the difference between compulsory service and today's whole volunteer military. I'm not sure most of the population understands what an amazing either bargain or, depending on your perspective, travesty occurs with the vast majority of the folks, particularly the enlisted in our military. Many of them, active duty, are on additional forms of social support, food stamps, and so on, because the wage they receive is so low. And to me, the notion of someone who's not only made the commitment to go and spend time in the military in general, but also then made the commitment to spend time in the military in a combat situation, to give them a small token of something cash, tangible, that they can use to rebuild their lives once they return is without question a good idea. I wonder if your guests could address, from their knowledge, what current salary scales are with the military. Not to be a throw up here.
All right. Thank you, Bruce. What about those salary levels?
I have no idea. I do know whether the president signed in an increase for them, I think, recently about a 3.5% wage increase. But it's changed so much since I was in the military. I'm not sure what the base pay is and all the entitlements they may have as being married and people who live off base and such. So I can't address that.
Yeah, when you look at just the wage level, it's not necessarily completely – doesn't come tell the whole story because so much else is provided for you. And isn't it at on the base stores, things are much cheaper than they would be off base, that kind of a thing. But sorry, Bruce, we cannot answer your question. I certainly can't. Rick Isbell?
Well, I can't tell you exactly how much the base pay is right now, but it is very, very different from what you would see on the outside world. And that's why it's attractive to someone that's in the military thinking, wow, maybe I should get out and look for a regular civilian job. And as you touched on, some of the things that are provided for you, housing, and depending on if you're single, you may get food thrown in that deal. But if you're married, you really are eligible for food stamps because
it's that bad.
It's that low.
Okay. Let's talk about the homeless. I brought it up at the top. I mentioned that the homeless numbers at the outset of the program, and of course, one is too many. But for our population in Ohio, I think Ohio has about 110,000 veterans. There's about 400, Rick, you've mentioned, in Ohio that are homeless, or is that just in the Columbus area?
That was just at that one event.
Okay.
That was last year.
Tell me about that.
Last year we had the homeless veteran stand down, and what we do is we do a questionnaire on the inset as people are coming in. And for those that answered the questions right, that were veterans or had an ID of some sort, we came out with a count of 400 out of the 800 and something people that walked through the door. So of that amount of people, they were there for the benefits, the medical, the dental, the outreach, the shots, clothing, food, law, legal help, haircuts, and of course, I think I said clothing before. Mm-hmm. But there was a lot to be offered in one day, and that's just one day.
400 people. What kind of sense do you have? You said in that same article I read, you said there's probably going to be more this year.
I would think so because of the downturn in economics, people losing their homes, more people returning from the Gulf. And as we all know, I don't care what people say, there's a stigma with someone that's in the National Guard trying to get a job nowadays because what if you're called up again? And they may not tell you that at the very outset.
They know the laws now that they have to hold the job.
Right. And I hear enough people coming back complaining, I can't find a job because, when I tell them with the National Guard, all of a sudden I'm not qualified. And so this is what I'm hearing from the street, from people walking in or calling me at my office.
It's hard to imagine somebody who's enlisted with the National Guard not being able to get a job because they are enlisted with the National Guard. It's sort of a dichotomy.
Yeah. And not everybody's that way. Right. I don't want everybody thinking, you've got a scarlet letter on you because you walked in the door. But there are employers that, hey, I can't afford for you to be gone. I can't afford to keep your space open.
What do we do for homeless vets in Ohio?
Well,
it's city by city.
Yeah.
Location. I think we have a fairly aggressive one here in Columbus. The Community Shelter Board is kind of the central point for a lot of the homelessness, including veterans. I know the Department of Veterans Affairs has an outreach individual that goes to the shelters, goes on the land trying to identify those veterans and offer them not only what the VA can offer but also directs them to our office. I think that the shortcoming we have in Columbus and probably throughout the country, and I know Rick and I have talked about it in the past, is we look at a growing trend. Most people think of homelessness as being an individual man, but there's families out there. But on the other side, there's also those female veterans that may be homeless and may have children. And let's say the VA says, well, we've identified that you have a PTSD issue. We need
post-traumatic stress disorder.
Mm-hmm. Have to hospitalize you for, let's say, 6 weeks in Chillicothe for treatment. Well, what am I going to do with my kids? So, there isn't a whole lot
And there's no way to deal with that.
Yeah. Well, unless family or friends or neighbors take care of the kids while that veteran is away at treatment. I think will be a growing trend. When I was in the military, there was a small percentage of females. I think the last number here was close to 18%. So as that number grows, there's going to be more and more exposure and potential exposure for female veterans that having some issues that they can't control. And then the homeless female veteran, there isn't a whole lot of availability because everything is kind of geared still to the male homeless.
Yeah, mental health issues, post-traumatic stress disorder, that's a big one. And it's big because we're much more aware of the problem now. We know it is out there and we're more sensitive, although there have been criticisms just since the latest wars started that they weren't. I think they're working really hard to rectify that. How do you know when somebody comes to you that this is maybe something you need to refer them to some mental health agency or some help like that? Because you may be their first point of contact.
Well, it's the questions they ask.
Questions they ask, mannerisms, twitchy, and not focusing on you. You're looking around and jumpiness and things like that. So fortunately, all of the people we have working with veterans in our office, our benefit specialists, are veterans. Some of which come back from Iraq and Afghanistan deployments, some from earlier engagements. So they may have it. So, I know when I was interviewing somebody a couple years ago, I could tell that they needed help, and we were able to get them into treatment.
Are you trained or sensitized in any way to spot these kind of situations because it's so prevalent now?
Well, I would say that we've both been with a lot of people that are in the know, mm-hmm. that have given us over and over again, these are the things you look for, and here's the help that's out there. And doctors have stepped forward, and people that are outreach personnel that have given us insight on what to talk about. I will not be the person to say, you definitely have it. But if you're coming to me with problems, and I'm going to tell you, I get a lot of family members looking mm-hmm. for help. I have a son that's isolated himself, or I have a daughter that's placing guns or ammunition in certain places of the house just to feel safe. They're not sleeping in their beds. These little things are telltale signs of someone that's looking for some help.
I think it was Lori that called earlier. She said she was in the mental health care business, and she brought up that issue of why isn't there some kind of boot camp for folks before they leave the Army? What sort of screening is done to help people before they leave to make sure that they are okay? Because, a mental health issue isn't something that you wear on your sleeve necessarily.
Well, I can't address what goes on because I've never been through this mm-hmm. stuff recently. But PTSD may not happen the day of getting out of the military. It may manifest itself a year later, 5 years later, 10 years later.
Okay.
So it just isn't an overnight event. And I think we have to be cognizant that, unlike many other engagements like World War II and such, that today's environment, especially in Iraq, Afghanistan, there isn't a line of demarcation. This is the enemy. This is the friendlies. That anybody, no matter if you're male, female, if you're a cook or a combat engineer, you're going to be exposed to probably some traumatic events during your time in the military. So I think the military is kind of looking at that, saying there's probably more likely than not that the person may have some mental health issues that I think, not knowing what they do on the outtake, is that maybe they recognize that stuff and they are taking steps.
Plus, if you're a citizen soldier, you're taken from your placid life here in Columbus, Ohio, and you're thrown into the desert where you're on edge 24 hours a day. Then you're expected to come back and flip that switch and become citizen again.
Right.
And some people may not make that change so evidently or easily.
I wanted to get to one more email before we check out here. It's from Don, but it is gone. Okay. Well, anyways, this is All Sides with Ann Fisher. You have been listening to our discussion about Issue 1 and about all the different benefits that are available to our returning vets. Joining me today, Rick Isbell of the Columbus Office of Veterans Affairs, and Doug Lay. He is with the Franklin County Veterans Affairs Commission.
Sorry, Veterans Services Commission.
Veterans Services Commission.
That's okay.
Thanks, Doug.
We get...
Oh, this is listener-supported WOSU and WOSU HD 820 Columbus NPR News.